Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin. If you're looking for a dull, feel-good religion, or clap your hands, sit around the campfire, kumbaya, you've come to the wrong place. We are dealing with toxic levels of authentic masculinity. I would say good luck, but luck is for pagans.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Adam Minahan here, sitting with David Niles, and we have a guest. The first time to have a guest in a long time, right? It feels like a long time, at least. It's a returning guest.
That's right. I have been on the show. It's been many years. I've been on probably five or six times. Father Brian Ketterer here, priest of the Diocese of Tulsa. Reigning in from Wilburton and Tallahena, which is two small towns way down in southeast Oklahoma.
Beautiful parts of Oklahoma.
Yes, very beautiful. Some of my favorite parts
of Oklahoma.
Yeah, the Texans love it too.
I know.
They all come up there because they're like, wow, there's nobody here.
Dadgummit. I know.
And you can just like buy the land.
Yeah, you can buy land. You can actually afford it too.
Right.
But
yeah, for now.
Tell all the Texans.
Don't tell them.
Buy it.
Don't tell everybody. Shh.
Just kidding, Texas.
Yes. Cut that part out. There's no land down in southeast Oklahoma.
Yeah, but it's great to have you back.
You were
an associate pastor of the of St. Benedict, where Dave and I have been parishioners for all of our lives.
Yes, back when the show started.
Baptized my oldest daughter.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think my son probably served one of his first masses with you.
Probably. He served some of my masses down in Tallahena.
Yep. Yeah, both my
two of them.
Oh, really?
And it's like the first time that they've had servers in.
Yeah. So fun story with that. I think it was when Luke grabbed the processional cross, which clearly hadn't been used in a while. He carried it to the front of the church and then out toward the back. And as he did, there was about a 6-foot spider web trailing from the processional cross. So right in the middle of right in front of the altar, I kind of stopped him, grabbed the spider web and threw it down. And kind of looked at my people and smiled and said, "We haven't had a server in a while, have we?"
That's hilarious.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's great to have you back. Great to have you here. Great to have you here in Tulsa.
It's always good to be back here. It feels like home.
Yeah.
Tulsa does.
You know, it always will be.
Yes, it. Yeah, I'm a Texan at heart, but I came to Tulsa for college and just fell in love with Tulsa and have called myself a Tulsan since.
Yeah. We claim you also.
Yeah. I think as one of the seminarians said the other day at the dinner, referring to Bishop and someone else, I'm a Texan, but I love Tulsa more. Something like that. If it's
we'll
possible to love something more than Texas. But yes, I'm a Texan with my heart in Tulsa.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the drink real quick, because there's also other things I'm sure we need to catch up on. So
yes, yeah, because we're drinking something very special today. We're drinking an 18-year Balmore. Product of the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society. They still don't sponsor our show.
It's ridiculous.
Still, somebody please email these people. Tell them to send us an email, something. I don't know.
Just give us two free deals of
We come very cheap.
Just,
we can be bought at a low price.
There's some Oklahoma words for you.
Right. We're prepared to offer you free coffee for life.
I'll take it. So we're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers
to Jesus. So this is for people who don't know, the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society, they're a whiskey club. You have to be a member to buy their stuff. But what they do is they buy barrels, whole barrels from other distillers, and they'll finish them themselves. So this one they finished in second fill ex-bourbon hogshead barrels.
Mm.
It's cask strength
as it
always is from these guys. But it's just, Balmore is so good.
It is.
Yeah.
I think the first time I tried it was in Ireland, actually. It was some pub that had a whole line of whiskeys, and I remember trying a few, and it was a Balmore, maybe 12 or something. I think the one with the red label, finished in sherry.
Yeah, that's the darkest. Is it called The Darkest?
I don't remember. Balmore
Darkest?
This was really good.
Several years ago. But I was like, wow, like this is amazing.
And yeah, so, Balmore is like one of those hidden gems that people don't talk about very much. So,
which they shouldn't, because the more they talk about it,
the
price will go up, because it's just underpriced.
Yeah.
Like in Southeast Oklahoma. Exactly. Don't tell anyone.
Don't tell anybody.
So like, yeah, as the myth goes. Yeah.
Yes. Supposedly.
Yes. Yeah. Supposedly. Or maybe it's a trap for Texans.
That's right.
Doubtful. Some of them
stay and come to Mass. So if you go to Mass,
okay,
I'll tell you all about it. If you don't go to Mass, the land doesn't exist.
That's the thing. It's like, hey, I feel like every state has, except for California, Illinois, New York, Oregon. Basically, if you voted blue in the last election, you don't have people moving into your state. But everybody else does. And it's like, look, if you're Catholic, you can come. That's how I feel about
You're welcome.
It.
Thank you, Dave. That's sponsored by Dave.
I have thus spoken.
Yeah. A couple things that I wanted to make sure to discuss that's important is, one, an old Patreon member of ours passed away. His name is Michael Camp. I ask that everybody in their charity to pray for his soul. We always want to... There's been a couple people who have passed away like as patrons, and we try our best. One of the things that we try to do is pray and sacrifice together as men. And so this week we'll be offering up prayers and sacrifice for his soul and for his family. Another thing that we're doing, though, on Patreon is we're doing the AMAs, is what the kids call it, the Ask Me Anything, with a theologian, Dr. Aaron Henderson. And it's going really well. There's been a lot of good questions on there, and Dr. Henderson is knocking those out of the park with very thorough answers. So another benefit of becoming a patron outside of the standard whiskey glasses and things like that. So patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow. Plus, you'll be able to have access to the camp out for free if you become a Patreon member. And that's like the end of September is when our camp out is. And we'll be opening up for signups probably end of this month. We only do it about a month out because we don't want everybody signing up early and then bailing.
Right.
So that's coming up. And I'm hopefully have that ready to go by the end of August for signups. And it typically goes up very fast.
Also, if you support us on Patreon, you will get the knowledge that you are supporting something amazing that's incredible. And that will give you, I guarantee it, a deep sense of gratification and fulfillment. You will be fulfilled if you just for $9.99 a month.
The greatest joy on this side of heaven.
Right. It's just, you know what? It's like fulfillment can be yours for just one more subscription.
Yeah.
It's just this one. This is the one you need.
It's better than Netflix.
You're so close. So anyway, also, you butchered a pig this weekend.
Yes. You came and helped.
Yes.
It was very fun. It's still not done. So I've slaughtered pigs before. I've
harvested.
Sure. You could see, yep, that word sounds fine to me. But I've never actually done the butchering. So I was doing that for like 4 hours today. It's very slow because I've never done it before. So it was a lot of watching this video by Brandon Sheard.
How to butcher a pig from YouTube.
Yes, and then pausing and going back watching exactly like, okay, wait. Where was that? You know, like,
yeah,
doing that over and over again. So the first side was going real slow. Then when I moved on to the other side, that one went a lot faster. But it's just, it's a lot of work. It's an insane amount of work.
Was it more difficult than the dissecting a cat at Bishop Kelly? Did you ever have that?
Definitely.
Anatomy class?
We didn't do a cat. I did a shark.
Oh.
Which was the worst. Because
it smells.
Yes. I had... When I did my biology class was right before lunch, and this shark oil would stay in your hands for 3 days.
Ooh.
And so
Dave and I were in the same biology class.
Yeah. It was terrible.
And we did not get kicked out of the biology class.
When I was chaplain at Bishop Kelly, I'd always stick my head in the biology classroom and sniff before I came in.
Yeah,
oh, no dissection. Okay, I'm safe.
Yeah.
That is the truth. That is the truth.
So what was the thing that you learned that you took away from the experience?
You know, what I really appreciated was watching the kids throughout the process. I think most people would just assume that this it would be, oh, you should, the kids shouldn't be there when you shoot the animal, for instance. You know, like, oh, you make, don't, you know, that they, that wouldn't be good for them. And that's just not true. I don't think that children naturally have an aversion to, you know, watching an animal get slaughtered, for instance. I think that they imbibe that from adults as, you know, as they get older, that, oh, that, that there is something abhorrent about watching that or being a part of it. So that's, I really enjoyed that, just seeing the kids, you know, even coming and help scrape the hide and just doing what they could
to help.
Yeah. I wish I were here, actually, because I've never been hunting, so I've never actually killed an animal, nor have I been there when an animal's butchered. And I love meat, and I feel like that would be something that would be very good for me to actually understand the process. And as, even as a Christian, we recognize there's something unnatural about death, you know, entered the world through sin. But for animals, there's a purpose. There's a purpose to that death, for a higher, yeah, for a higher good, for a higher cause.
Very true.
And it makes you just feel the community around you, because it's a community event.
Yeah, I do want to, let's talk about that a little bit more on the other side of the break, because I think that there's a lot to be said about that, about events like this being good for the community.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the great, the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan, our special guest, Father Brian Ketterer, priest of God.
Bam!
Ka-chow.
So we were just talking a little bit right before the break about slaughtering and
harvesting.
Harvesting, sure.
Butchering. We moved on to the butchering part.
Yeah. But Adam, you made the point about the community. That was like, and it really was. It was, this is just the kind of event because processing an animal, a deer is different just because most people, you know, you're not going to actually process the entire animal. You're going to get kind of a select few things and move on. But with a pig like this, is like, I don't know how much, how heavy it was. I think it was at least 350 pounds. It's a big, it was a very large pig. It's more than you can do by yourself, probably.
So you needed someone with a knife while you held the pig up yourself.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah. So you need help. And so there was something just really great about it, I thought, about every, hey, we're all coming together to do something very real. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just a real day of like real work. It just, it was full of reality. You know what I mean?
I envisioned as we were, as it was happening the other day, like how if it was back 100 years ago and this is something everybody just did on a regular basis, how it would be, of course, we wouldn't be doing it in midsummer because we're not. We'd be a lot smarter and we'd be a lot more seasoned in this whole event. We wouldn't be doing it in a proper time like we did this time. But, yeah. You know, in the fall when it was cooler outside, how it'd be just probably a week of like, hey, I'm going to go help Dave. And then Dave's going to come over and help me. And then we're both going to go help Father Ketterer. And like, you know, it was just a community event to the point where the natural community aspect of having to help one another and having a week or 2 weeks of just, we're just going to see each other and be like, the kids are going to be together. We're going to be together because we have to get these things done for our families, creates this natural, organic community aspect that we don't find in today's world as much.
Yeah. Brandon Sheard over at Farmstead Meat Smith.
No.
What is that? What is it?
What, Farmstead Meat Smith.
That's what I said.
Oh, is that what you said? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yes, he did.
Okay. I'm pretty sure apologies. That's exactly what I said. Okay, but anyway.
You normally mess it up. I just assumed you messed it up.
Thanks for the vote of confidence. I consider him the expert on this sort of thing. He has some really great videos called The Anatomy of Thrift, where he talks a lot about culture back in the day, right? And what it was like and how that people would do exactly what you're talking about. It's like, hey, I'll help you slaughter your pig today, this weekend. Next weekend it'll be mine. After that, week after that, it's, you know, Brian, Father Ketterer's. And he says that people would employ and there's also parts of the pig that don't really preserve well. You know, this is, if you imagine a time before freezers and refrigerators, the offal could not really be preserved, right? So you had to eat it fresh. So everyone would go home with their portion of cheer from that particular day. And so he says that people would employ generosity as a strategy for survival. And it just is a really interesting thing to think about. And that it's not just a selfish thing, right? It's not like, oh, I have to, you know, give you stuff so that I survive. But like this becomes really the building blocks of real culture, right? Where you're gathering around.
Society requires virtue.
Yes, exactly. And there's, of course, the ultimate destiny of all of this is the feast, right? And, so there's just something joyous about harvesting an animal because you know that the feast is coming, you know?
Yep. That's why it's there.
Yes.
It's almost indeed. Like there's a Lent, sacrificial lamb, something. Easter.
Yeah.
Something like that. There's a connection there somewhere.
Hey, Adam, keep thinking about that.
I'll come back to you.
And then write down some good
thoughts.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Father, what else, anything else going on with you before we jump into the topic?
Not a lot. It's a very quiet area, a lot of driving through the forests and the hills and the mountains, which I love. A lot of good time for prayer, a lot of good time for silence. I actually find sometimes, because I typically pray the Rosary and Divine Mercy Chaplet on my way to wherever I'm going, because it's usually like 40 minutes to anything minimum. Mm-hmm. And then I'll have my radio off. And then usually about halfway back home, I realize I could be listening to the radio, but I'm just driving in silence. I love it. I love having that silence. It does get sometimes too quiet. I wish my parish were a little bit less quiet, but we're working on it. We're making some strides. Just trying to wake up some sleepy little towns and try to get the fire of the Holy Spirit kindled in their hearts.
Our friend Carlo Broussard, he came down your
he
way.
He has. He's come down a few times.
Yeah, not that long ago, and you turned out a good-sized crowd for him.
Got my two parishes together, and then the parish over in Hartshorne, they're about 20 minutes away, which is a little bit ironic because my two parishes are 40 minutes apart, but my nearest parish is actually not my parish. But everything is so spread out down there, it's kind of hard trying to figure out the conglomeration of what pastors cover which parishes and where there's actually highways between cities or towns.
Yeah. Highways?
Spots. Yeah, well, they're two-lane roads.
Yeah.
Where you can go fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's no turnoffs for a long time.
And not a lot of police.
Yeah. That's one thing I do love about our diocese is that we're really investing time and energy into these smaller towns, the rural areas of Tulsa. We were even... we brought in a whole system, so to speak, for Catholic Leadership Institute, CLI, that we brought in to really help with the smaller parishes on how to revive them, how to bring them, get the community involved and give you the resources needed to help, bring people back to church.
We got currently six rural pastors going through the program, so each of us have 2 to 3 parishes going through. Sometimes we're combining our parishes, sometimes we're doing them separate. But again, having that outside leadership resource to help us create a vision along with our parishioners, get our parishioners involved with forming that that vision and just discerning our mission and then starting to execute and go make disciples of all nations.
Yeah.
Even the Texans.
Even the Texans. So I like most Texans.
Let me, I just want to ask you, I know it's not our topic for the day, but I do want to ask you one question about this because you really set me up well for this question. With regard to making disciples of all nations, do you find that that is easier or harder in small town America?
I think in some ways there's an ease because the ease of relationship, because you know everybody, or it becomes easier to know everybody. Where in a big city, you might randomly run into somebody once and then maybe not again for a few years.
Sure.
Where I might run into people weekly, monthly, regularly. But there is, it also can become a little bit difficult because people get very set in their ways. Often many people are multi-generational from whatever town they're in. Especially rural America is dying as agriculture is dying. And so a lot of people see their town as, well, it used to be this or that. It used to be that. They talk about the past a lot because they don't see a lot of a future. So sometimes it's hard to get people shaken out of their ways and realize, well, just because the town is declining in population doesn't mean the church has to be declining. The church can still be growing. So I think that's sometimes can be a harder message for people to get. But I think once they see it, if you get, say we had 5 converts, that would be a huge, that would be like almost 20% of my congregation. Like it would, my congregation would increase by 15 to 20%. So a few extra people actually can be a huge game changer.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
You know, and that's easy to say when you have a small parish, but if I think that we have to have that same attitude with big parishes. If we could get 5 people, that would be a game, you know, like for, you know, just think about for you, you know,
yeah.
Like what can we do? Not the parish. I mean, like, what can I do? You know, if I could get one person, that would be a game changer.
Yeah, it's a game changer for the individual too.
Yes.
Because we realize, wow, I actually have a mission and I fulfilled it. And this is, the church is growing because of it. And we realize, yes, that's what we're all called to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just about growing the church number, but actually about finding souls.
Yeah. And, you know, this goes back to the whole, like, what is loving your neighbor? It's like your actual neighbor, like the one who lives right next to you. Like,
yeah,
it was so funny when we just moved recently. And
I mean, who is my neighbor? Well,
there's literally one we labeled.
You
them.
Know how you have a driveway,
right? There's somebody right.
And there's another one
right next to it.
There's a guy who lives there. That's who I'm talking about.
Yeah. It's so funny when we moved, you know, children have a way of really kind of bringing points home that, you know, you should actually be, that should be one of your first questions, but it's not. So we were walking through and one of the realtors there, the person that we're buying the home from is there, neighbor is there. Anna walks up and we're talking about, you know, people around. And she goes, well, who all here is Catholic? And I'm like, awesome. You know,
that's my course, daughter.
Yeah. It's like, none of them are. And then she goes, well, you should come to church with us. And I was like, you know what? That was awesome. It was
that's
just
when you look at him, you're like, you totally should.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's really great.
I agree. I second that.
Yeah. You should just come to church with us. But
I didn't tell her to say that, but you should come.
But that was awesome. Yeah. Sometimes we make it a lot harder than what it should be.
Yeah.
Also, it was hilarious to see the reaction of the realtor's face.
I forgot to ask you, do you like guacamole?
Yeah. okay. Hey, so we're going to talk about the Eucharist tonight. We're going to talk about with something that maybe you know a little bit about, Father.
A little bit. I've encountered it.
talking about the Eucharist, this is a good time as we're working through John, the Gospel of John in Mass. We're just off of the Eucharistic Revival, National Eucharistic Congress, which is awesome. Dave, do you want to talk about, on the other side of the break, that question that you had, or should we just save that maybe for...
Let's save it for the end.
Okay, let's save it for the end.
It's a fun question, a theoretical,
ridiculous
Eucharistic question. I love theoretical theology.
Eucharist, like, yeah.
It's in theory.
Ridiculous.
Yes.
Ridiculous. So, okay. So make sure you stay tuned to the podcast. Go to CatholicManShow.com. You can check out all 400-plus episodes that we've done. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Men, have you checked out Exodus 90 lately? If you've heard of Exodus 90 before,
you're probably thinking cold showers and Lent. But the Exodus 90 app offers so much more. It's a daily companion to help you grow to closer to God and to become the man you want to be. This summer, I'm following along with the app's daily scriptures, reflections, and prayers. It's awesome. On the app, you can join the Enthronement to the Sacred Heart, the Exodus 90 Summer Book Club, and St. Michael's Lent, which starts August 15th and leads up to the Feast of St. Michael the Archangel on September 29th. St. Michael's Lent is an ancient tradition of prayer and fasting popularized by St. Francis in the Middle Ages that's been lost in our time. Let's bring it back. Join the men of Exodus 90 and four Carlos Martins, Catholic priest, exorcist, and host of the Exorcist Files, who will serve as our spiritual guide for St. Michael's Lent this year on the Exodus 90 app. We will awaken to invisible realities and enter into the spiritual battle that rages around us all the time. Go to Exodus90.com for a 14-day free trial to the Exodus 90 app and to learn more about St. Michael's Lent. That's Exodus90.com to join us for St. Michael's Lent starting August 15th.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. We're here with Father Brian Ketterer. Great to have a guest on again. Haven't had one in a while.
I just want to tell a story about Father Ketterer real quick.
Before we get into the topic?
I've told this story before on the show, but it's just a great story. One time...
I know what it is.
One time I was sitting... This is back... we had
theology
on tap. I was a young... Maybe married.
No, you
maybe
were not
married.
You were going to theology on tap. To court.
But Pamela and I still went after we got married. Anyway, doesn't matter. But it was a while. This is a while back. And I'm sitting there. I was early for theology on tap, you know, like as one does.
And back in the day, you had to get there early to get a seat.
Yeah.
It was packed.
Yeah. And so I have my beer. I'm at the bar and Father Ketterer walks in and he sits down next to me and he looks at my beer and he goes, "Are you drinking a Vorsteiner Dunkel?" And I just like looked at him and I said, "Yeah, how did you know that?" And then he proceeded to tell me about like, well,
I know the 50 beers on tap and I could kind of tell by the reddish color and the amount of foam.
Yeah. And it's like, well, and I could tell by like the carbonation. It's like, oh, it's gotta be this kind of whatever. And it's like, so it's probably a Dunkel. And if you're drinking a Dunkel, it's gotta be Vorsteiner. And it's like, all right. Well, I have no idea what any... Like, I can't look at anybody's beer and tell you what they're drinking.
Is that a Bud Light?
Coors Light. Oh, what's the difference?
Okay, so we're talking about the Eucharist. Hopefully we can get through most of this. We're going to talk about the union, like, the union with Christ and the Eucharist between the communicant and the Eucharist itself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then hopefully what... St. Francis de Sales says how we should receive communion in preparation to receive communion. And then maybe an evangelical type of send-off with what if people who ask you why you receive communion often, maybe more than just on Sunday if you're a daily communicant, or if you go more than just on Sunday, like if they ask you why do you do that, here's some answers that St. Francis de Sales has for you.
Mm.
So that's kind of the overshot. And then we'll have the ridiculous question that you have for the podcast.
Okay.
Okay. So obviously the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ in the Eucharist. Father Louis Lalemant talks about how there's four ways in which the union of Christ enters into the communicant, the person who receives the Eucharist. And he says the first one is there's just a local presence of his sacred humanity in the person who receives communion. And he says, this union is the least and is found in those who take communion unworthily and in the state of mortal sin.
So even in those people.
Even in those people.
Yeah. Not just in those people, but yeah, even in those
people. In those people, there's a local presence of his sacred humanity.
Which makes sense because...
It's still the body, blood, soul.
You received the Eucharist.
And the physical presence.
And the of the Lord. So it's in you. And
mm-hmm.
So there you go.
So Father, maybe just a snapshot of why is it important to receive the Eucharist in the state of grace?
Well, because we can receive the graces from the Eucharist. Because a state of sin, mortal sin especially, cuts us off from the divine life, and so we can't receive the divine life within us in the Eucharist or in any other way in that state of sin. So when we receive the grace of the sacrament of confession, then we're fully able to receive those graces from the Lord in the Eucharist.
Yeah. And in fact, it's another sin to receive.
Sin upon sin.
Communion, yeah, knowingly.
You eat and drink condemnation upon yourself, as Saint a wise man
Paul
once said.
Somebody said.
Yeah, I said that. Yeah.
He did, quoting St. Paul.
So I think it's important that he starts off this way, just to reiterate, like, listen, it's still the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ. Even the person who receives it in the state of mortal sin, there's still a local presence of him in receiving the Eucharist.
Yeah, even if you're in sin, go to the church and pray. Go to adoration.
Yeah.
And hopefully that will spur your heart to realize, I want to be in closer union with Jesus.
Right. Yeah, you're still commanded to go to Mass. Yeah. You still have to go to Mass.
Yep.
Even if you're in mortal sin.
Correct.
You just can't receive the Eucharist, and you should get there like a little early and
ask to go to confession.
Yeah. Go to confession, yeah.
Yeah.
That's really the best thing to do.
Definitely. Yeah.
And then go have a great life.
Yes. And experience joy.
Yeah. You'll love it.
It's the best. So the next one is a moral union, which is formed by the mutual love which binds Jesus to us and us to him in communion. Such is the union of two friends. I think this is interesting how he uses this as an analogy, but like, so everything is built upon each other, right? It's a hierarchy of good, so to speak. We're at the lowest. This is the moral union, which he says, such is the union of two friends. Those who join together by the affection which they can bear in each other. Like, there's this commonality. C.S. Lewis talks about this, right? You too?
Yeah.
Kind of friendship.
Which I'm glad he uses this, because otherwise I wouldn't have necessarily known what he meant by moral union.
Yeah.
So, but yes, I think that this is something everybody understands.
And this belongs to those who are in the state of grace, right? This is an important part, that you can't actually be like have this moral union not in the state of grace. Specifically why... how you kind of just articulated, right?
But even in a natural friendship, if there's something between you, if one of you has offended the other in an extreme or severe way,
like
that
a way
friendship,
that would destroy the friendship.
Yes, that friendship needs to be remedied, reconciled, and then the friendship can continue. You know, you still bear the wounds of that, but in some ways that also gives you opportunity for greater graces and greater love.
And also, I think that this is this moral union is going to increase or decrease by your own relationship with him.
Yes.
Outside of just the reception of Holy Communion, right? So if you don't have a prayer life, if you're not, you know, seeking to really develop a relationship and a friendship with Christ, then you're missing out on a lot of this.
Yeah. Like a friendship based on love, based on relationship with Christ, is going to be much deeper than a friendship based on golf or hobbies, racquetball, football, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, this is what, you know, Aristotle talks about with the three types of friendship, right? That it's not just a utilitarian friendship anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a striving for an authentic friendship.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So the third one is, and he says that this is the higher order, and most people, actually, this is where they are, hopefully, is the extraordinary effects which the Holy Sacrament produces in the soul and the body, so that it is as if we touched flesh and tasted the precious blood with sweetness and transports of joy, ravishing the soul. I like how he says that, almost inebriating the soul, you know, taking over.
The anima Christi.
That's right, yeah.
Blood of Christ, inebriate me.
Yeah, this union does not adequately fulfill the words of our Lord, which extends to all who take communion, whereas the union belongs only to a small number of perfect souls. So this is the interesting, I don't know, what are your initial thoughts there?
Are you asking me if I'm one of those number?
No, I'm just asking, like, what are your initial thoughts hearing that?
In some ways, my initial thought here is, it goes, I think we're working into deeper relationships, clearly. Mm-hmm. Where the second one reminds me of like a friendship between people, where this is almost that friendship that becomes like a marital friendship, where it goes beyond just, hey, we're friends, we love each other, but actually we've committed ourselves to each other, and we've connected our minds and souls and hearts and even bodies intimately, and experience this next level of this intimacy, this love, and the fruits of that.
Yeah. Yeah, and see, so yeah. This to me, this is like, this is very interesting between the third one and the fourth one, because the third one is actually the last thing that you can do, right? Because the third one is just receiving worthily, having a deep love for our Lord, desiring Him, desiring to spend, have a relationship with Him. Because the fourth one actually is almost like contemplation, where it's like you're no longer doing anything; it's the Lord doing it to you, right? So the fourth one becomes a union. Not indeed substantial or essential, but accidental. Most perfect that can possibly be of any kind of this is accidental change can make us like unto God. It's this theosis of becoming unto like God.
Yeah, what we're unto, looking forward to in heaven. God. Yeah.
Right. And so, but this is not something that we can do, obviously. This is
right.
This is the super, yeah. Done, super substantial.
Done unto us.
Done unto us.
Right. Yeah, sort of like contemplation, right? You can meditate and... But really, contemplation is something God reaching down to you.
Mm-hmm. But and it's not going to happen unless we've paved the way.
That's right.
That is correct.
Right. Right. And that's and so this the
God
the,
only works with those who seek to cooperate with Him.
Yeah.
Right. I mean like,
He works with all of us, but so we can't receive it if we're not.
He will often use people in all different ways, whether they're aware of it or not, willing to cooperate or not. Right. Because He uses all things to
that's right
for His greater good, but. The vast majority of, things that ways you're going to experience God in your life are going to be moments when you are willing and like seeking to be in cooperation with Him. You just go think about the things in your life, the creation of life, okay, is something God does in cooperation with human beings. God alone is the author of life, okay? Man cannot make life. Only God can do that. But He only does it when we cooperate with Him. Baptism is another thing, right? That only he can only, it's just Him doing it to us, but He only does it.
We have to do our part.
Right, when we seek to cooperate with His divine
order. Pour the water, put the oil on, say a few words.
Right.
God does the rest.
Yeah, and the part that we do, not that big of a deal.
Not that hard. Just say the right words.
Yeah.
That's all you have to do.
But this is the beauty of the incarnation, right? Because matter matters, so to speak, that God became
man. Thank you,
man.
Scott Hahn.
Yeah, is that who said it?
Probably.
Yeah,
I'm sure. That sounds like a pun he would make.
Yeah, probably so. But, that God became man so that we can become like God, right? That we are made in His image and likeness, and it's so important that we were body, soul, composite, that He came down to show us that He is the true icon of manhood, that He has paved the way, the most perfect man, that we can become like Him, and He gives us a way to become like Him out
Amen.
Of true love.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan, Father Brian Ketterer. We're talking about the Eucharist, what it does to you, ways that we participate in the graces of communion.
Yep. And so if the relationship between our Lord is so intimate to the point where, He is now doing the things that affect... We just become receptive. The bridegroom comes into our lives and does things for us, to us, that we should take seriously this beautiful gift of salvation, the source and summit of our faith. And so I wanted to look into how should we receive communion? How should, what should we be doing to prepare if it is as serious of a thing as what we claim it to be? Then we should prepare like it is that serious. There's not a guy out there who just wings the most important interview of his life. There's not a guy out there who doesn't prepare in some way, shape, or form to become a priest or to become a biological father, to do something that is so important in their life, you don't just wing it. You prepare.
Yeah. Thinking of the Olympics right now, many of these athletes have been preparing for decades just to get the skills that they have. But even then, there's this proximate preparation. What are they doing while they're, you know, they're in Paris? What are they eating? What's their sleep schedule like? What time are they waking up? What time are they getting to the arena before their event? What kind of music are they listening to? What do they wear? Who do they talk to? What do they do? Their routines? Do you make the Michael Phelps angry face? Like, what kind of preparation do you have? Because it all leads up to this one moment. And it's, you know, if they prepare poorly, they will do poorly. Mm-hmm. And yes. We have even a greater gift than a gold medal in the Eucharist.
Mm. Yes, I think I'm really glad to be talking about this today because it's something that Exodus has written about recently. I've been thinking about it ever since, just about my own lack of good preparation so often when I go to Mass, because, you know, you do it so often, it does tend to become a habitual thing. Something it's like you don't think about. I can only imagine, Father, what it's like for you as a priest, you know, because it would be so hard for me not to just, you know, kind of end up going through the motions. And I know that that's just going to happen sometimes. But we need to do our best, especially for Sunday Mass, to really make sure we're treating this like the highlight of the week.
Yeah.
You know, like that we need to outwardly represent it to ourselves and also to our family, and that this is the most important thing I'm going to do all week. And if we get in the habit of doing outward things that show that this is, in fact, the reality, how important the Mass is, that will go a long way to teaching ourselves inwardly and others the truth about.
So we should have some little sacramentals around the sacrament, because a sacrament is an outward sign of an inward reality, which is what you're saying. Hey, we should have some outward signs of this reality. Huh.
You should write that down.
Yes.
Yes, but so it's like, you know, it comes down to things, you know, like what do you wear to Sunday Mass? Mm-hmm.
Let's go over some of the things that he says.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
And this isn't obviously an end-all, be-all list, but this is maybe some food for thought, maybe something that you can take home, maybe you pick a couple of these
things. According to St. Francis de Sales.
De Sales, yeah. And he says, obviously, if it's so important, it begins before it actually happens.
Correct.
The preparation begins before it happens. So it starts, or it commences the night before, to prepare yourself for Holy Communion. And he suggests that you give, like, several aspirations or loving exclamatory prayers, which I think is really funny how he says this. He says that he refers to, like, short exclamatory prayers as arrow prayers.
Hmm.
Hitting the mark.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Kind of. And he says, like, just little things like, just help us, God. Or God, help us. Or Lord, may your will be done. You know, just like little things just through the night, just to orient yourself towards God.
Yeah, starting to open the door, if you will. Open the door of the heart.
Yeah, you know, obviously make that fit your own life. Like, I'm just kind of laughing about this to myself. Like, St. Francis was a single dude. You know, when you live by yourself, you can get away with just, like, randomly yelling, like, God help us!
Wait, like, I was just you don't say it, like, audibly.
I was just thinking about, as a married man, like, save us, Lord! Your wife comes running into the room. What's wrong? It's like, I'm just getting ready for Mass.
Well, this is also the beauty of the Liturgy of the Hours, right? The Liturgy of the Hours, if you pray, like, Vespers or Compline at the end of the night, you know, there are all these, quote-unquote, arrow prayers littered throughout, you know, God, come to my assistance, Lord, make haste to help me. You know, these little prayers that you can kind of take from the beauty of the prayers of the church and take them and use them, you know, throughout the day or throughout the evening.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then he also makes a very practical suggestion, which is just retire early, like go to sleep early on Saturday.
I'm so bad at that.
So that you can be rested.
Yeah, I heard this suggested a few years ago. We read some article about how people at some point in history prepared for the Lord's Day, how Saturday was a full day of preparation, like cleaning the house, getting the meal prepared for Sunday, putting the clothes out, getting the clothes washed, whatever it is. and going to bed extra early, the earliest night of the week, so that you can be refreshed and joyful on Sunday to celebrate the Eucharist.
It feels right.
And I was like, that is 100% opposite of what the world slash at least America does. Because they're like, Saturday nights, like, I can stay up as late as I want because I don't have work the next day. I can sleep in on Sunday. So we use Sunday as like a recovery day from partying Saturday.
Saturday has become the secular Sabbath.
Yes.
Right, where we do everything we want on Saturday. And then Sunday is just a like recovering from the hangover.
Yep.
But so it becomes not a day of leisure. There's no true leisure in it because it's not actually rest.
No. Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do try to do things on Saturday, make sure the yard is mowed. You know, Saturday is a work day. Like that's the way I think about Saturday. It's a work day. It's not a day off. It's just a day for different stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that I can have Sunday to just be with the family, you know, do things that are fun.
That is the ideal, at least for me.
Right.
But even at least just to be alert for Mass, for the graces that are coming, to be fully prepared.
That's exactly right. Because, like, listen, if you're trying to open yourself up to receive the graces, like we were talking about it being in union with Christ, you have to be intentional. You have to have put the effort into doing so. And a lot of times, there's times where I will literally be going to Mass or like to adoration and trying to hype myself up, knowing like this is going to be hard. Make it aware, like in your mind, like, yes, this is going to be difficult. I either have my kid or I'm tired or I'm like something like, and like acknowledge there's going to be something difficult for me to do.
Yep.
But I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to do it the best I can. So I think that's very important.
It's a very practical, but I think it'll make a huge difference if you say we're going to bed extra early on Saturday night for this purpose.
Yeah.
And your kids will ask, well, why are we going to bed early? Great opportunity to explain. Great catechesis moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tell them why.
Because I said so.
No. Never give that answer.
Unless
they've asked more than five times, then you can tell them.
No, I've definitely said it.
Yeah. So then he talks about like if you end up waking up in the middle of the night, like to orient your thoughts immediately to our Lord, like in prayer.
I try to orient mine immediately back to sleep.
Lord, help me go back to sleep.
Yeah.
Don't think of anything. Just lay back down.
Yeah. And then he talks about how intentional you need to be in the morning to wake up with joy, which I think is like that's something you can just choose to do. Like, you know, and that's very hard a lot of times as a family because it's one of the most stressful days of the week for you because you're trying to get everybody up, get them fed, get them dressed, get them out the door, get them in, you know, get them into the van, make sure everybody has their shoes on, make sure everybody has their hairbrush. You know, there's like just the whole litany of things that you have to do to try to get people, get your kids to Mass.
I don't think of waking up and joy in the same sentence very often. But both of these two, the waking up in the middle of the night, having these heavenly thoughts and waking up with joy, makes me think of like Christmas. So like as a kid, if you go to bed early because you know Santa's coming. If you wake up in the middle of the night, you're like, oh, is it? No, it's not time. Okay, I have to go back to bed. And when I wake up, Santa's going to be here. It's going to be Christmas morning. And then you wake up in the morning and you're like, yes, like it is time.
I knew it.
Like, can we have like just a little bit of that for Mass on Sunday? Hmm. Like that's ultimately what we should be working for.
And I think the only way to get there is to meditate on the reality, to spend time like every day cultivating that, you know, awareness of what it is we're doing at Mass, who it is we're receiving.
It's better than Christmas.
Really, right, yeah. And because if we don't ever spend time to think about that, then we're never ever going to get, we're not going to get excited about it, right?
It's better than like Santa Christmas, not like Jesus is born Christmas. I mean, that's pretty good.
It also helps you to realize the most important things, regardless of how the Mass is celebrated, regardless of how great or poor the choir is, regardless of how great or poor the homily is, regardless of how, like, all the variables that could possibly be going on during the liturgy, regardless of how well or how poorly they're done, that the reason why we are there is an act of worship towards God.
And really, the homily and all of that is a preparation again. So that preparation continues for that moment of encounter with the Lord.
Yeah. So that now, yeah. so he actually didn't give a whole lot of like, okay, now that you have received communion or right before you receive communion, here's what you should be doing. He actually didn't give a whole lot of suggestions there. So I thought that this could be an opportunity for, never mind. We are out of time on Catholic Radio.
We will leave that up to you.
Yeah.
Right.
Good
in
luck, everybody.
Write in and tell us what you have done.
Just Google it.
So we're out of time on Catholic Radio. Go check us out on the podcast. We're going to continue this conversation and talk about Dave's ridiculous question.
Speculative theology.
Yes. Father, it's great to have you on yet again.
Always good to be back.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
So he says, like, once you receive communion, to stir up your heart and do homage to the King of Salvation, to kind of basically realize that you've received our Lord, right? And mm-hmm. to almost like embrace him, like, you know, almost like allow yourself to be almost like envision like him just hugging you, or like, you know, being in your presence, like loving you, you know, and being like saying, you are my son, you know, almost like I envision a lot of times how I actually saw this happen just the other day over at your house when Davey, your son, like came running up to you and like you went down on one knee and gave him a big old bear hug, you know, and he like had this huge smile on his face whenever mm-hmm. it happened. Like, you didn't see the smile because it was on the side, but I like saw it and I was like, that is a beautiful image. You know, this is something, this is a father-son moment. You know, and so just this embrace, this how real it is when you receive communion.
Yeah.
Sometimes I like to think of myself, I do this during prayer too, but like, I like imagining that I am Saint John at the Last Supper, reclining my head
on his
chest. The chest of Christ, right? Just like, just resting,
yeah, resting
with him,
mm-hmm.
and just like not doing
I
anything.
I guess that was a normal thing to do back then.
I don't know. Yeah, it's super weird. I've never seen anybody do it now, but it's like, it's Jesus
and Saint John, which is awesome.
Well, we live in a culture that's
sexualizes everything.
Yeah, touches, I get that. Touch is a weird thing for us. We don't really know what to do with it, especially between men.
Yeah.
That's true. It's just like a weird thing in...
Fist bump, pat on the back.
Yeah, but it's like, look, John, you have literally never showered.
His feet were clean.
Ever.
His feet were clean.
He did have clean feet. Yeah. I think.
Was asking for a shower, and Jesus is like, no.
No, I'm not doing that.
No.
Come on.
There's not enough water.
That's right. This has to go around.
Yeah. And one thing else I thought he said, St. Francis de Sales suggested, which I think is very practical, is he says, share with him your inner concerns. Be aware that he is within you, and you know that he himself is your happiness. Mm-hmm. And finally, make him as welcome as possibly can, namely, probably being in the state of grace would be a good...
Prerequisite. Yeah.
And behave in such a way that one recognizes in all your actions that God is with you, which I think is very important at the very end, because if you just received our Lord, like at the end of Mass, or, you know, before we actually say the final blessing, you know, don't be distracted. I mean, don't act like you didn't just receive the King of Glory. You know, don't act like you didn't just receive our Lord.
How would we...
Don't dismiss it, I guess.
How would we, through our actions, actually show God is with us? Like, if someone, like, comes to Mass and you, like, do the communion thing and they're not really sure what it means, how would they know that God is with you after communion? Like, how would we manifest that?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I would say reverence, mm-hmm. right? That you should have a, like, you should be...
Your demeanor should be different.
Revering? You should have reverence.
Less
you should have reverence. Yeah.
More focused.
Right. Prayerful.
Silence, solace, like being still.
Remaining in your place after Mass, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't just bolt.
I think that's a great sign. And I think that's a good sign of a thriving community, too, is when Mass is over. What do people do when Mass is over?
One of my biggest pet peeves is people like talking in the sanctuary. It's
Dave has made this very clear.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's actually something that I've preached against or about. And I made it our Lenten practice
I didn't call it penance. Have a parish Lenten practice?
Yes, I didn't call it a penance. I called it a practice. So I said, after communion, or after the end of Mass, when the song is over, we're going to kneel down in silent prayer for 1 to 2 minutes and leave the church in silence. If you have any conversation, make sure it's done outside of the church part, which basically means you have to go outside because I don't have a vestibule.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so for the most part, I think one of my parishes did really well with that. And actually, they maintain it like at the end of daily Mass, especially like about a minute or two, everyone kneels down, maybe sometimes one or two get up and shoot out. And even on Sunday, a lot of them will stay and pray. And when people don't, they're kind of like confused or up. Some get upset about it, but there's kind of like, well, why are you disrupting my prayer time? Like mm-hmm. they realize, I said, this is a sacred space. Like, don't interrupt someone else's sacred space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it used to be more culturally known that you don't speak in the sanctuary. Like, whether you're religious or Catholic or not, everybody knew, like, when you go into a church, you whisper, bro, okay? Yeah. Like, there's no talking. Like,
but it's only if you have to talk.
Right, there's no talking in here. And if you have to, you keep it down.
Or you just step out for a moment.
Yeah.
Or I tell them, yeah, if you need to talk with somebody, like, just step out to the back for a moment and ask them, you know, whatever it is, and then go back. Because that right there is saying, look, like, this is prayer space. This is important.
This isn't holy ground.
Because even I would try to keep business to a minimum before Mass.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it really comes down to, and people who are, like, talking in the sanctuary, I don't at all for a minute think that they're intending to be disrespectful or anything like that. But I think that there is some more catechesis to be done, because it just hasn't been pointed out to them maybe that, hey, you know, this whole space, the sanctuary is sacred, right? It's a set apart space, and it exists for the presence of the Lord. Okay. And, you know, just like Moses needed to take off his shoes before the burning bush, you know, like, there shouldn't be secular conversation.
There's decorum that needs to happen.
Right, yeah. Like at telling people about your weekend or talking about the game, whatever it is, like, the sanctuary is not where that should take place.
Correct.
And it's out of reverence for our Lord, who still resides in the tabernacle, even though Mass is over, right?
Yeah, because the church is a place set apart. That's what it means, sanctuary, holy place. So set apart from what? Everything else.
The world, right.
The world has dibs on everything else. You can talk about anything else, anywhere else. Like, give us this, like, 5,000 square feet, please. Mm-hmm. You can have the rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, so set apart from the world, so those worldly things, they shouldn't be discussed, and it's just something that...
It takes us out of heaven, back down to earth.
Right.
It's like we come from earth to ascend to heaven, but... when we bring earthly things into the sanctuary, it brings heaven back down to earth. I mean, but in an earthly way, not...
And if someone comes up to you in the sanctuary and tries to talk to you, it can be... like, you don't want to be rude to people, right? So I just try to... someone asks me something, I try to make sure to respond in a whisper.
Yeah, when somebody asks me something, I slap them in the face and say, I will ask the questions.
Yes.
I mean, I will ask the questions.
Or you can just say, like, here's a quick answer, and if you need more, it's like, hey, I'll talk to you after Mass.
Yeah.
Like, we can discuss this after Mass.
Yeah, or it's like, hang on, let's talk about this in the commons or whatever.
But when you mentioned a catechesis needs to happen, I think the problem is some of our churches don't do a good catechesis of what that space is. Like, the physical building doesn't catechize us.
Yeah, architecture.
If
matters.
You think of Old St. Benedict's,
correct. Yeah,
you go in and you're like, "What about this says that I should be quiet and reverent,
mm-hmm.
and not talk about whatever?" There wasn't really a lot.
Yeah.
The new space is better, but still, when a whole church, like, when you walk in and you say, "This is a sacred space," your demeanor changes. There's a reaction to it.
Yeah, like when you walk into many of the great cathedrals around the world, it's. Yeah, obviously that is a powerful experience. Everybody knows, oh, whoa.
Yeah.
This, wow. Okay.
And I mean, your first instinct is to pull out your camera.
Where is it? Yeah.
Well, but why? Sadly. Because there's a beauty.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
So there is this encounter. that you want to encapsulate, like that you can look upon later. But
so, unfortunately, a lot of the churches in America were built, you know, between 1960 and 1980, or in the 80s,
or
and
before 2000, basically.
Right, and they're
anyway.
Not all.
Why
that,
don't we? Why don't we move on to your question?
Okay, so there was some. I heard this question on Catholic radio, but I thought that is a good question. So,
or just a funny question.
It's a funny question. I just like, you know, like the thing is, the incarnation involves funny, like inevitabilities. Okay. This particular question was. Someone called in and was asking, okay, Jesus is walking around.
On water or land?
Just like in the Holy Land.
Probably water.
I mean, either.
On the water.
Let's just
either.
Say, okay. Let's just say either. And there are mosquitoes in the Holy Land. If a mosquito bites our Lord, are they receiving communion?
But probably not in a state of grace.
Because there's no way mosquitoes are in the state of grace ever.
Actually,
they're the worst.
Actually, I think that's true. They're not in a state of grace because they have not been baptized. They don't have. They actually only humans
and humans.
I'm going to say only persons can be in a state of grace because I think angels are also, demons are not. But
they're the worst. They
are the worst. You're right. But it was a very funny question. So let me just tell you what I have thought.
Yes.
And I am just a dude. Okay.
We also asked Carlo Broussard this.
This is
very much a dude.
This is just my, what I thought. I'm giving my answer before I talk to him.
Okay.
Cause like, right in the, I was thinking like, I'm going to draw a distinction between like Jesus's physical blood, like his human nature blood and his, and the Eucharist.
Sacramental blood?
Yeah, like, well, his divine, like, the body, blood, soul, and divinity. Like, if you just have his human blood, which was, like, still pretty sweet.
Which he said to eat and drink.
Right. Like, does it have his soul in it? I was thinking that I was going to say no, that it didn't. At least until after he rose from the dead.
His physical blood.
Yeah.
I don't know. I dare not tread.
Yes, I know. It's like, I don't think we had
but,
a class on
I mean,
this.
We have...
I could tell in your eyes, like, I don't think we talked about this
We have
in
the tradition.
Seminary.
One of the women mopped up his blood from the scourging.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like
that.
And Veronica wiped the and face of Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
His tradition.
And so I think we would venerate that as the blood as much as the Eucharistic blood,
well, see, this
which
is
transforms... miraculously, we'd still venerate that and
I definitely
adore
would.
It.
Oh, I definitely
so
would.
So I think, I don't know. I think it would be, I don't know if you can really...
It's one of those questions split. That is like, first of all, let's not spend too much time on this, on whether or not a mosquito has received...
Which is also the questions that Dave was like, you know what, I'm going to spend extra time
I'm going to spend
this.
All the time. Like, I'm forgetting all the other questions.
So could we... squish that mosquito or
I don't know.
Does a mosquito go to heaven?
No.
Or that one does.
No mosquitoes go to heaven.
I was making the joke like at the end of the world, God is like the world is like destroyed, it's not existing anymore. And then God's like, what is that? And the angel's like, oh God, remember those 12 mosquitoes or like the 200 that bit Christ while he was it's like, well, they turned out to be immortal. It's like I destroyed the world. Yeah, but these mosquitoes are still here. Well, can we get rid of them? I don't think so, God. Well, what are we going to do? I don't know. You're going to figure that out. You know,
this is what you think about late at night?
Yes. Sometimes. This is why when I wake up, I try to go right back to sleep.
This is why you should say little arrow prayers at night.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So Carlos said that there's a distinction to be made between his physical blood and the sacramental blood.
Well, I believe what he was saying is that Aquinas speculated that after the death of Christ, but before the resurrection
on Holy Saturday,
If you were, if they were to have celebrated the Mass, you would have the body, blood, and divinity, but not the soul, because his soul hadn't resurrected yet. Now, it's just a speculation.
But does his soul resurrect or his body resurrect?
Look, I don't know. Seems like it. But seems like both. Also, I don't remember. I think he also said that, you know, because when you celebrate the Mass now, Father, and you receive communion in the species of the bread, of the body, you also receive the blood.
Correct.
And vice versa. I think before the resurrection and after the crucifixion, because you receive both the body and the blood by concomitance, right? That because your body and your blood, they go together.
Right? Let's keep it that way.
Yes. And so, but one of the things that Christ was doing at the Last Supper was he was drawing a distinction, saying, here is my body over here. Here is my blood over here. So he was a symbol of his own death, right? That he was saying almost that he himself had already separated his body and his blood. That like, here is my death before you at the Last Supper. And so until he had risen, that the body would have been the body and the blood would have been the blood until he had risen from the dead. Then once again, you get both by concomitance. But look.
It's a fun speculation.
Yeah. Nobody knows, okay? Nobody knows.
Glad that one wasn't running the test.
Well, if it was...
One final question before you're ordained.
Choose wisely.
You just answer, and they're like, we don't know either.
Yeah.
You're good.
What? See.
I was sweating blood.
Father, great to have you on again. It's a lot of fun.
Yes.
Anything else?
Do you have a, like, last advice for, like, hey...
Oh, yeah, good idea.
Here's a great thing to do, like, how to be better at Jesus.
Try to be more excited about going to Mass than anything else you do.
Okay.
Whatever that looks like. If there's something else that you're more excited about, ask why, and then how can I be that excited about going to Mass?
Very good. I like that. Especially that last part of it.
When
like,
you are, you will be in heaven, because that's what the Mass is.
I took Father's advice, and it killed me.
Yeah.
It's the last thing I did.
I'll go to your funeral.
Okay. Well, you have to say it. Because it was your fault.
I'll be there for the reception.
Yeah. Thanks, Father.